God is perfect. He always has been. He always will be. However, we are not perfect in our thoughts or actions. What can or should our day-to-day relationship as functionally imperfect people with a perfect God look like? What happens when we struggle in our mind, or sin with our bodies? What's appropriate when we're happy or when we want to celebrate? In our conversation through the book of Psalms called Transparency, we will discover that God has consistently lived in transparency with us and is inviting us to live in transparency with Him.
How many of you guys have read any kind of Shakespearean literature? Raise your hand if you've read anything Shakespeare. Just about everybody in the room. Raise your hand if you have not read anything Shakespeare or not familiar. All right, like two. That's a pretty good statistic here that I can talk all I want about Shakespeare all day. But don't worry, I won't. Just a little bit, though. When I was in high school, I had to memorize a soliloquy in Hamlet. That's not the Shakespearean literature I want to talk about, though. Romeo and Juliet. How many of you guys are familiar with Romeo and Juliet? That's the one you read, or you watched a film. I think maybe we can capture everybody in the room if we talk about either watching one of the adaptations for film or the literature. Well, in the story of Romeo and Juliet, you have Romeo and Juliet from different families, and they're really lovesick for one another. And there's a couple of things that Romeo says that stand out to me. They're frankly some of my favorite lines that Romeo said. I don't know if you have some favorite lines of Romeo. If not, you might have one now. You'll see it on the screen. This is one of the things that Romeo says about beautiful Juliet. He sees her with a glove on her hand, and he says, "See how she leans her cheek upon her hand?" Something like this, if you will. "Oh, that I were a glove upon that hand, that I might touch that cheek." I think it was like this. You know, it's a little more fair. I guess it could be like this, but isn't this a little more awkward? But Romeo is so in love with Juliet that he longs just to be the glove that's on her hand, because the glove is just touching her cheek, whether it's the back side of the hand or this side of the hand. Just longing just to be that, because he has this literally, he's sick in love, and you know he's sick in love because he's having a conversation later on in the story of Romeo and Juliet, and he has this conversation with his friend, and his friend asks him about what's bothering him, and he says, "What saddens lengthens Romeo's sadness lengthens your hours?" Like, what's making you so sad that's making time as it passes by seem so long? What's on your mind that's causing time to seem like it's just going on and on and on? You guys know if you've waited for something, maybe it was a vacation or to graduate or to get married or to meet somebody to get married or to find out if you're going to get that job, or, you know, some of those are positive. Or if you've waited for something that is not as positive, like test results, or you're trying to figure out if you're going to get accepted somewhere, or you're waiting for imminent, at least by doctoral notice, that someone's going to end their life. I mean, there's all kinds of different waiting. So if you're waiting on something that means a lot to you, it seems like time goes really, really slow. And so Romeo responds and he says, "Not having that which having makes them short." Man, that's a great, great line. Now, it's old language, so it's sort of like, I don't know what he just said for some of us. But basically what he's saying is, what makes time go so long is when I don't have that thing that I've had once before that I want. And when I have that, when I'm with her, time flies. When I'm without her, time drags on and on and on. If you're to sum up Romeo, you could say lovesick. You could say that what we're reading or what we're hearing about Romeo and his love for Juliet is a desire, a deep, deep desire. And listen, desire is not inherently bad. In fact, desire can be really good. And in God's creation, there's lots of things that are good. Frankly, everything that God made is good. It's only become bad or negative or toxic or damaging or encroaching on our freedoms when we use it for bad things. And so desire, I'd love us to consider a context for desire, is not always bad. It's not bad to have desire. In fact, when we were worshiping, I was thinking when we were singing out the last two songs, when we were singing those things to God, I felt inside of me that when I looked at the truth, when I looked at the words, and looked at the content, I thought those things about God. And inside of me, there was an equal, like almost a merger of I believe mentally, and I add my emotions to it. And they met together. And I was like, yes, my mind and my heart just met together in worship. And I thought about it for that moment. I'm a guy who's pretty in touch with his emotions. And when I sat in that chair, let me just give you a little confession. I've desired very impure things in my life. I'll just leave it that simple and abstract. But I've desired lots of things that were impure in my life, specifically the lust category in my younger years. And I can remember the curiosity and the longing, the, quote, desires that I had for impure things. And as I sat in that chair, what was really special for me is for a moment, my desire was comparable to the desires I used to have for impurity. And then you know what happened? My love and attraction and desire for God went right past it. And it surprised me. I went, oh, I long for you more than I've ever longed for anything that is fleshly and destroys me. I long for you with a more pure long. And I'll tell you who did it. It was the grace of God just stoked it up in my spirit. Desire, longing. There's a question. What do you desire? What do you long for? What inside of you do you realize when it's rising and you go, whoa, I didn't know I felt that way. For Brent and Cecilia, when Brent sees Cecilia, they just got engaged. When he sees her across the room or when he's apart from her, I bet he sounds a little bit like a bearded Romeo. He's a bearded man right here. I bet he sounds like that. I bet he has thoughts like that. I bet she has thoughts like Juliet for Romeo in that way. But even more so, our hearts, our souls, our very being is in a much deeper love relationship with the living God that he has initiated with us. In fact, we believe that God has been transparent with us since the beginning of the foundations of the world were laid. In fact, God has the first word. He speaks everything into existence. God was conversing with us. His conversation birthed life into us. So God's been living in transparency with us, created humanity, created all that we see, birthed it all with words. And he's been wanting to have a conversation. He's been wanting us to live in transparency with him forever and ever. So from creation, from speaking everything into existence, to speaking and saying, you've fallen short of my glory, and to speaking and saying, you need to put your trust in the Messiah that's coming, to Jesus coming and saying, put your trust in me and find life eternal and never perish, to Jesus ascending out of the grave, coming out of the grave and ascending to heaven saying, go and make disciples. There's been a conversation going on, and he's coming again. Revelation says he's the first and the last. The Greek words, Alpha and Omega. He's been doing the conversation all along. And he's inviting this love, desire, love sick, and almost an intoxicating love that it alters all of you. And I sat in that chair. I felt like my emotions in my mind was being altered with passion and desire for God. That's frankly why I didn't want to walk up here. Because when you're really in love, I mean consumed by something, you would rather not stand in front of a bunch of people. You'd rather just be in that moment together. However, appropriate desire and love for God is best, and you'll see it in the passage today, is best exercised and expressed in community. As sweet as the intimate moments are as you're alone, or when I was sitting right there next to my friend Matt, it's more edifying to do it in a corporate setting like this, and I'll show you why. If you have your Bibles, chapter 42 and 43 of Psalms, chapter 42 and 43 of Psalms. If you've come to City Lights before and you're here with us or resonate before on a Wednesday night environment, you've traveled through the scriptures with us or you've listened to us on podcasts, you know that we usually pick small portions of scripture and we try to go through books of the Bible. We're going through the book of Psalms. That's what our series is called right now, Transparency. So you might be thinking, Chris, why on earth are we doing two Psalms this morning? We've heard you teach. Getting through one Psalm is hard enough. Are you planning on teaching through the picnic? No, I'm not necessarily planning on going and going and going. But historically, Psalm 42 and 43, in the earliest documents we have of the original text, these psalms were put together. And so they were only separated years and years afterwards. So when I was studying, planning on teaching just Psalm 43, the biblical scholar in me couldn't do it. I couldn't just do 43. It seems very incomplete. So we're going to be going through 42 and 43 this morning, not just 43. I want to give you a little bit of context. If you look in your scriptures, chapter 42, before verse 1 starts, you see where it says, to the choir master? You see where that part right there? When you look in your scriptures and when you see in the book of Psalms, when you see like a title there, beneath the bold one, I know my scripture says book 2 because this is a different section of the book of Psalms. There's three sections for the book of Psalms. I'm not going to get into all of that, but it says book 2. And then my scriptures say, why are you cast down, O my soul? Those were not in the original text. But right underneath that, to the choir master, when it talks right above verse 1, that was in the original text. That's usually where we get a little indicator of context, what was happening and who wrote it. So you see right here a different name for us, the sons of Korah. the sons of Korah. Let me give you just a little historical context of who Korah was. Korah, but prior to the sons of Korah, obviously the sons of Korah came from somebody. So the fathers of Korah were people who were in the Levitical priest line, which means the tribe of Levi, which means priests. Okay, so all those words I just mentioned, like what's Levitical, what's Levi? It's just a priestly line. In God's economy, in God's family, there is a line of priests. And so Korah descended from the line of priests. Everybody understand that? So the sons of Korah are just sons of priests. Now in Moses' day, when Moses and Aaron in the Old Testament were overseeing the things of God and they were administering the things of God, the priestly system was in place. Korah, the fathers of Korah, served under Moses and Aaron. However, there was a rebellion led by Korah in history against Moses and Aaron. Why? They envied them. Because Moses and Aaron got to do these prize things where they got to lead the people and lead the worship and lead the priesthood and lead the direction of the people of God. And if you're in the midst of that and you're in that priestly line, there wasn't a need for a whole lot of priests. And so Korah, the father of Korah, well, he, and his name was Korah, he rebelled. He decided to get 250 other people to rebel against Moses and Aaron and say, we want to do our own thing. Because they did this, and remember, they were envious because they didn't like their part in the temple. They didn't like their part in, let me just give it our language, they didn't like their part in God's story. They looked around what other people were doing. They said, I'm jealous. I'm envious. Let's rebel because I want what they're doing. Let's just pause for a moment. How many of us do that? Some of you right now are probably like, man, I could do a better job than Chris. I want to be up there. Maybe I'll be up here next week. Who knows? Some of you are like, I'm glad I never will ever get up there. I don't want to ever do what he's up there doing. And it's not usually this. It's every day. I wish I had her hair. I wish I had that car. I wish I had that house. I wish I had those clothes. I wish I had those friends. I wish I had that husband. I wish I had that wife. I mean, let's be real. If we're talking about transparency, if we're to hold up a glass and say, what's really going on inside? God sees it all. We envy, much like Korah. So let's not be careful to judge Korah. I'm like, I can't believe it. They were in the priestly line and they weren't happy. Well, they were envious. They rebelled with 250 people. God was not pleased with this. What ended up happening in this rebellion, this standoff with Moses and Aaron, it's a really neat story in the book of Numbers. Earth, it's like an earthquake happens, and the earth literally opens, and all these people who were rebelling fell in and died. And then because of this, a plague hit on the land. 14,700 people died of a plague because of their rebellion as well. And then God, by his grace, stops that plague. This is the history of Korah. So when we get a psalm written by the sons of Korah, we're going, whoa, what? It's very interesting. And this is another important thing to remember in the biblical history, in the biblical story, in the biblical, the whole biblical context is this. Usually, if somebody had sinned, everybody is going to be killed. Everyone would get put to death. And we see this in the biblical story prior to this, when one person would rebel in the household, the entire household, up and down, older and younger, children, animals, everything would be put together, and they would all be put to death because there was, quote, sin in the camp. Achan, in the story of Joshua, he stole some things that belonged to God, and he hid them. And when those things were found, Achan and his whole family was put to death to remove the predisposition or all the traces back to sin. Now, let me just ask you something about your life. How about the sins of your mother and father? How about the addictions that you've seen? How about the abuse? How about the neglect? How about the ungodliness? I bet if you're like me, I look to my family and my friends, or my family, my brother, I'm the youngest in my family. I look to my brother, my sister. I look to my parents. I look to my grandparents. And I look at these people and say, am I destined to do the same things? What's interesting here is the Bible speaks very specifically against even what our culture says. Our culture would say, you are bound to repeat the sins of your father, right? The actions, the thoughts, the things that have gone before you, you're going to do those same things. I'm looking to my son and daughter, I'm saying, no, by the grace of God, my children do not have to repeat my mistakes. And the way we spare our kids from our mistakes is we live transparently with them, and we say, here's what I've done. Here are the repercussions. Here's the starvation that it caused in me. Here's the death that it caused in me. Don't do this thing. And that's been the biblical story. So God spares the sons of Korah, and they write this psalm. And it is amazing to think about the context that God was gracious to spare them, and they are some of the richest psalm writers. They were worship leaders as well. The sons of Korah did two things specifically. They were the ones who would get up here like Tanner and Josh and Rebecca did this morning. They would get up and sing. And frankly, I love our style of worship, but compared to the Jews, we are like the quietest, smallest, unboisterous, most calm, collected style of worship. when people would worship in this day, and you'll even see the language, it was so loud and so expressive to God because they were so deeply grateful for his love and kindness to them that it was the loudest, most joyous celebration that actually people who are non-Jews could join in and sing as well. Massively beautiful picture. So they would do that. They were also door holders. We see this in the other script, in other Psalms, that the sons of Korah actually just held the doors to the temple. So the people they descended from complained about their job in the temple, in the Levitical priesthood. These sons of Korah don't. Let's pick up the story. Chapter 42. They are wandering at this point. You can tell by their language that they're not able to do the things they were meant to do, which was to worship and work in the house of God. Chapter 42, verse 1, here we go. And remember, this is a song for the choir master. If you're the choir, we write this song for you and me, all of us to sing in the temple, all of us to rejoice together. So I'll read it with a little bit of emotion. As a deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. I mean, doesn't he sound a little bit like Romeo? Think about it. I mean, have you ever said these kind of things? A deer that pants. When have you ever panted, by the way? When do you pant? When you're thirsty. Why would you be thirsty that you would even be panting? Yeah, because you've been running. There you go. So you're running. Think about a deer panting for water. If a deer is just resting in a meadow or sitting in grass or just relaxing in the shade, it's not going to be panting. This deer is exercising. It's not going like to the gym exercising, but it's running. It's acting. Perhaps even, what would make a deer be panting? Running from an enemy. And that's our context right here. So the sons of Korah see themselves in a situation where they have literally been running from an enemy. And we know in David's time, in David's reign, which is when these sons of Korah have been writing, that there are a lot of enemies pursuing the people of God. And they were rising up in the kingdom from Saul, who was the king, pursuing David and his men, from David's son Absalom, who was pursuing and trying to invade the kingdom and take it over as well. So think about a deer panting. Have you ever been in a situation where you have enemies coming after you? And you're running, maybe even physically running, but you're certainly emotionally running, and you're losing sleep, and it's a difficult time in your life. You feel like a deer panting for water. I mean, if I were panting for water, I would have to probably run around this whole building several times, and somebody would have to be chasing me to actually get me moving. And if I came right up on stage after that, I would be going, and people would be like, whoa, what's wrong with you? Korah, that is what he says he feels like. I'm that thirsty for God. I'm that hungry for God. I'm that desperate for God. I am panting for you, God. Soul thirsts for you, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before you? Now we know that the sons of Korah are looking to the place where God's glory dwells. And listen, God's glory, and Tanner spoke about it rightly, the Spirit of God, we don't have to call him like, Spirit, come on over here. Spirit is in here. Spirit, the Spirit of God is in all the people of God. If you put your trust in Jesus, the Spirit of God is in you. You don't have to beckon him to come, but he does fall afresh in a sense of he helps you see that which is already here more clearly. And so when he says, when shall I come and appear before you, God? In the Old Testament, God's glory specifically dwelt in the temple, a physical edifice. And so he longed to be in that place. And it wasn't just because intimacy was there, but it was because the people of God were there and they celebrated the glory of God for all of the world to see. I don't know how much of you guys look forward to a Sunday morning. I don't know how you think about, quote, church or worship together. But what Korah is talking about is what we're doing right now. Have you ever panted to be here on a Sunday morning? Have you ever thirsted? That you're literally aching because you want to be not just like, I need to hear from God, but I want to be with God and I want to be with God's people. And listen, his job was to bring glory to God. God, I want to sing to you, not just me. Because couldn't he just sing to God by himself? Couldn't he long for God by himself? Absolutely. There was something about being together as a community for Korah that he desired and missed and could not have. But he is, I mean, you can tell there's intimacy. Why? Why can you tell there's intimacy with Korah right now where he is? Because he's talking with God. He didn't have to go to the temple. You don't have to come to City Lights to long for God. But this kind of longing for Korah was when the body is together, when the community is together, there is a worship and an honor that goes up to God that can't happen when I'm wandering. My tears, look at verse 3, my tears have been my food day and night. He's weeping and crying day and night about it. It's not just a moment like, oh, I love that song. Oh, I love when that guy preaches. Man, the coffee's so great there. He's saying, day and night, I'm crying. Day and night, I'm aching. Day and night, I'm panting and longing to be with God. while they say to me continually, where is your God? Listen, if you're wandering or running from someone, there's trouble. Even if it's false, there's trouble. If you're running and you're wandering, when David was wandering and running, when Saul was chasing him, when Absalom was chasing him, when Korah, the sons of Korah, were wandering and not in the place they were meant to be, it's usually some trouble. You'll see in 43 when we get there, he says, vindicate me. He's saying, I've done nothing wrong, God. We've done nothing wrong. Unjust people are saying, where is your God? Have you ever asked that question yourself? You haven't said, where is your God? You say, God, where are you for me? I know you guys have been in these situations where you've been panting at least for God's help. This is a different kind of context. This context is, God, I just want to be with you. I'm not even trying to get out of my circumstances. Do you hear that? What was he longing for, guys? Was he longing for a physical place? He was just longing for God. Was he longing to be back home? He was just longing for God. Was he longing to do his job in the temple? Right here, he's just longing for God. I mean, look at the first verse. As a deer pants for flowing streams, so my soul pants for you. My soul thirsts for God. For you, the living God. That's what I'm longing for. That's what I'm thirsting for. That's what I want. And it's in the context of people saying, since you aren't where you thought you should be, now tune in, you need to listen to this. I know there's so many aches and pains in this room. So many of you are unemployed or just got employed or in between jobs or underemployed. So I know this is very applicable to you in your profession, although what you do for work is not who you are. If you're waiting to find a job so you can be who you are again, you're going to be restless, I promise. But if any of us are in between, waiting, longing for something, and in that moment you go, this isn't what it's supposed to be. I know some of you have had to file for bankruptcy. You're in the midst of it, and you're looking and going, this is not the way it's supposed to be. And you're probably doing what Korah's doing, looking back and saying, that's what it's supposed to be. It doesn't help when somebody comes along and says, where's God? What happened to you? What did you do wrong? When we hear that somebody lost something, we usually go, I wonder what they did. When something's off, I wonder what they did wrong. Job's friends did it. When people came to Job, when he had all these things falling, all the death in his life, they came and said, what did you do? What is your sin? We got to figure out what your sin is. Once we figure out what your sin is, then you can go to God and say sorry for it, and then perhaps maybe good things will come back to you. I mean, that was the trouble for them. Where is your God? And then verse 4, he said, these things I remember as I pour out my soul, how I would go to the throng and lead them in procession to the house of God with glad shouts and songs of praise, a multitude keeping festival. Do you know what he's describing? He's describing the worship that happened in the temple. I mean, look at the language there. I would lead them in procession. A whole group of people would actually go to the temple singing. Look at it. With a glad shouts and songs of praise. I think Josh may or Tanner may have asked us this morning, like, hey, let's shout to God. I think it was Josh, right when we first finished the first song or second song. I know some of you are still coming in late. We do get started at 9:45, by the way. But I know some of you are coming in, but I think one of them said, hey, let's shout for joy. And I was encouraged by the, woohoo, yeah, woo, rrr, all right. And I enjoyed it. There is several more of those. That is comparatively, and this is not me going like, you need to make more noise. But comparatively, we have not seen on a Sunday morning yet. The closest thing we've seen is on Mother's Day when we celebrate and try to honor mothers. The applause and roar to honor them, that was one of the loudest times I remember us here. What Korah is saying is this: I hear the shouts of the enemy. I hear their questions. I hear their accusations. What's the next thing he says? Oh, if I could only be in the courts again, leading the praise where we shout aloud to God. That it is like a festival. You've been to a festival before. Freedom Weekend Aloft. I mean, they've got bands and people dancing and singing and cotton candy. I've never been. And hot air balloons. So I'm just guessing at this point. I mean, it's a big old festival. He's saying what worship looks like in the temple, what is worthy to focus on, is the honor that's due to God. And oh, I would love to be back. Not the comfort of his bed. Not the safety of a roof and soldiers around him. Oh, I hear the accusations. I hear the lies. I hear all the insults about God. Man, I'd love to make more noise than those insults by praising. Isn't that sweet? We're going to go there a whole lot more, but just for a moment, how do you navigate when people are saying things against you? How do you navigate when frustration and circumstances start to just collapse? What do you do? What is your response in those moments when these things are happening? Because what's interesting is sometimes we say, God, get me out of this and get me to a place of comfort, safety, and goodness. Or we say, God, would you just do this or do this or do this? He's saying, oh, God, how I'd love to tune out, overwhelm the insults with praise. how I would love to just start praising you, not by myself, but I long for my brothers, my sisters. I look forward to Sunday mornings specifically because I get to see you guys. And though we might not be loud when we're singing, that's not necessarily what I want to give God that, because I think he's due that. But I'm just glad to see you because we worship together. We encourage one another when we are here saying, I believe in God. And when we struggle to believe in God together. That's what this is here for. And that's what Korah shows me. He's like, I can do this alone by myself as I wander. He's writing this out. But he says, I long to silence the enemy by the praises of God. If you want a pastoral encouragement and challenge, I would encourage you next time you face trouble or accusations, just start glorifying and praising God and silence all those lies and silence the enemy. Silence your past with praise. Say, enemy, you're not going to have the final word. Past, you're not going to have the final word in my life. And if you're like, oh, that's some good self-help stuff. No, it's the Psalms. Let me keep reading. Verse 5, this is where he turns. This is where he says what I was just saying, basically. Verse 5, he says, why are you cast down, O my soul? It's simply this. Why are you depressed? Why are you in a funk? We say that a lot in our culture. I'm just in a funk. That's a different way of saying I feel depressed. That's another way of saying I feel like there's a big cloud over my head. That's another way of saying I'm really grumpy. That's another way of saying I've been grumpy for days. That's another way of saying I don't know what's wrong with me, but keep your distance, okay? And so who is he saying this to? Himself. He's looking at self and saying, I see something's off in you. Soul, why are you in turmoil? Why are you in turmoil? Now listen, whatever situation you're in, you could look at your emotions and say, emotions, why are you so unhappy? Why are you disquieted? Why are you not content, emotions? And emotions might speak back and go, because people are insulting you. Because you don't, where's the next paycheck coming? What if she doesn't come back? What if he doesn't forgive you? What if your kids continue to rebel? What if someone finds out? Listen, he had plenty of insults coming from the outside, and he certainly had plenty of insults coming from the inside. And he says to the inside, oh, hey, inside, what are you doing? Inside, soul, thoughts, what are you doing? And listen, I'm modeling this for you, brother, sister, if you want me to equip you, and I believe that's what the purpose of my job is here, is to equip you to go equip others to walk with Christ. When you are downcast, when you are depressed, I encourage you to speak to your soul and remind your soul what is true. He says, why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God. Hey, emotions. Oh, listen, if your emotions are in a funk and depressed, it's probably because you've put hope in a changing circumstance instead of the character of God. And someone that's living in transparency with God consistently clings to the character of God instead of changing circumstances. Listen, circumstances are always going to change. They're always going to change. If you find yourself in a funk or depressed or off or grumpy, it could be because of other factors, of course. But what the psalmist is showing us is if you are clinging to something that's going to change, then what's going to change as well? Your emotions. But the character of God remains the same. So in the midst of all the changing circumstances around him, he clings to God. He says, hope in God. Not only does he say hope in God, but look at his next statement. For I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God. I shall again praise him. He's saying, hey, emotions, you're winning, but listen, I am hoping in God and I will be praising again. And Korah has in mind, I'm going to get together with the church next Sunday. I'm going to be together in community. It's not just going to be my voice alone. We are going to gather together and we are going to overcome all the pain, all the persecution, all the wandering, all the emotions that are getting me in a funk, and we will praise God again. And I don't know if you just go through deductive processing when you're depressed and you're like, oh, so what happened? Why is it the diet again? Maybe I didn't get enough sleep. Listen, I do this too. And by the grace of God, he reminds me, he says, Chris, hope in me and tell your faulty, untrustworthy emotions, what's true. Don't leave this up to your emotions. I love, there's this guy named Nick Vujicic. I think we have a picture of Nick Vujicic if you've never seen him before. Whoa! This picture is, it depicts very good. He was born with no arms and no legs. And he's an incredibly inspiring character. He loves Jesus, and he goes around speaking about Jesus, but he gets on all kinds of platforms and stages because he looks like this. What's amazing is this guy is so sound and solid and doesn't pity himself. And some of my favorite quotes about emotions and managing emotions come from him. He said this, it's just a simple line. You need to manage your emotions so they don't manage you. This is a guy who, when he was a child, had to look at everyone else and go, how come everybody else has those things hanging off their body and I've got nothing? How come they can get up and walk and move their arms and pick things up and I don't have anything? This is a person who was at one point trying to drown himself to commit suicide. Why? Because he listened to his emotions that said, you're worthless, you can't do anything, you're a failure, you're different than everybody else. And then he put his trust in Jesus and everything changed. And so he still says he has moments where his emotions are in a funk, they're depressed, they're downcast, and he says, no. I will not let my emotions manage me. I mean, that's a simple question. How many of you are allowing your emotions to manage you on a daily basis? The psalmist was dealing with the very same thing. My emotions are managing me. And he says, if you don't manage your emotions will manage you. As a counselor, when I sit and talk with people, you know the very thing that shows up every single time? Without exception, every single time, it's a battle of, this is what I think and feel, this is what God says is true. This is what I think and feel, and this has happened to me, this is what God says is true and will happen. It's a battle of belief. The psalmist shows that it's age old. I mean, Adam and Eve, the very first sin. I know God said this, but this looks good. It looks pleasing and tasty and attractive, and it's alluring because it'll make me wise. Emotions, emotions, emotions. Eve didn't manage those emotions, and Adam didn't help her manage those emotions. She was left alone in that context. Friend, if you don't manage your emotions will manage you. So the psalmist continues to go on. I'm just going to read from verse 6 on. My soul is downcast within me. Therefore, I will remember you from the land of Jordan, Hermon, from the Mount of Mizar. This is most likely the last point as you're leaving Jerusalem, the very last point. It's a very small hill, not even a mountain. And this is the last time that if you look back, you'd see Jerusalem. So the sons of Korah are wandering such a place where they're not even about to see home anymore. You guys know what I'm talking about. You know emotionally you've had moments like that. For some of you, you've gone through the agony of divorce, and it was probably that last time in the courtroom where this is it. You're kind of just looking. And I know a lot of your lives are still marked by that divorce that happened years and years and years and years ago. What I'm saying to you is what this passage says to you. When I look at the history of Korah, I go, wow, God, you can bring beauty out of ashes. You can restore. You can do these things. Why are you so downcast? Remember. And so he looks from this mountain, and he says, deep calls to deep. At the roar of your waterfalls, all your breakers and your waves have gone over me. This beautiful picture of water washing over the psalmist as he struggles. By day, the Lord commands his steadfast love, and at night, his song is with me, a prayer to the God of my life. Listen, I want to say this gently, but I want to say it also very authoritatively as your pastor, as your friend. There's never such a dark night of the soul that you can't sing. We see it in the New Testament. People were imprisoned, most likely being put to death. They were singing out psalms to God. There are a lot of quotes. They're not Christian quotes necessarily, but you don't get to see the stars until it's nighttime. Until the dark settles in, you don't get to see the beauty of the stars. And in some ways, this psalmist is actually showing us this very thing, that when it gets dark, he says, the prayers and the songs are coming out. And then he reminds himself again, verse 9, I say to God, my rock. But he says, God, why have you forgotten me? Listen, a transparent person living in transparency with God doesn't hide anything from God. God, where are you at? Where are you? He's struggling. God, have you forgotten me? He's asking the question, why do I go mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? Why am I struggling? Why emotionally am I distraught because of the enemy? Remind me what's true, God, help me. While they say to me continually, where is your God? And then he says it again. This happens 3 times in this psalm. Why are you cast down, O my soul? He just thought about, they're saying, where are you, God? And I'm saying, God, have you forgotten me? He says, my soul is in turmoil within me, but I will hope in God and I will praise again. He is my salvation and he is my God. Listen, someone living in transparency with God doesn't hide anything, any thought or any action from God. What does it look like to live in transparency, Chris? It's just letting God see and hear everything about you. Over in Little Lights and City Kids, the kids learn the same messages as us, and that's their big idea today. That's their one-liner. That's what it's all about for them. Living in transparency is letting God hear and see all about me. Whew, imagine if our children could embrace that. You know how incredible that would be to watch a generation go, I'm not going to hide anything from God. He's going to be the first to know. He is the first to know, by the way, but I'm going to be the first to tell him. Wouldn't that be sweet? Wouldn't that be incredible if we oh, Chris, I haven't done a good job as a father, as a sister, as a brother, as a mother, as a grandparent. I haven't done that. Okay. Look at the sons of Korah. They could look back and go, my mom and dad did this and this and this. Actually, they're dead because of their sins, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to long to just be a door holder in the house of God. Or if I'm the singer, I'm going to sing with all of my heart, and I'm going to be so festive with my joy and celebration to my God. He continues to go. He continues to write. We get into chapter 43 now. Chapter 43, I'll go through this fast just in case you're like, whoa, all right, that took him about this many minutes. Just trust me, we'll get through it. Here we go. Chapter 43, verse 1, vindicate me, O God. This gives us context that where they were wandering, what they were doing was in vain. The people were not in vain, but people were saying things and accusing them of things. And he says, God, O God, and defend my cause against an ungodly people. From the deceitful and unjust man, deliver me. He was going through certain situations where there were taunts coming from the enemy and it was unjust. I've already mentioned that. The psalmist, basically, you could just say it like this. The psalmist expects the enemy to taunt him in his trials. The psalmist expects the enemy to taunt him in his trials. For those of you who get into a difficult situation and then it feels like it's getting compounded by your emotions or by what people are saying, that's because there's a spiritual war and the enemy is just trying to taunt you to make it worse. You need to budget for that. In fact, someone who's living in transparency must budget for the enemy to taunt them in the midst of trials. You have to budget for that. If you're living in transparency with God, Jesus spoke himself to us and said, hey, in this life, you're like, yeah, Jesus, what do you got for me? You'll have trouble. Oh. Is this the part of the gospel, the thing called good news? Because that wasn't a great invitation. In this life, you'll have trouble, but take cheer, for I've overcome the world. So I'm not going to have trouble? No, I said you will, but I'm with you. And take cheer, for I have overcome all these things that will be for a short amount of time. You have to budget, not only for a trial, but also for the enemy to try to taunt you in the midst of the trial. But in verse 2, he says, for you are the God in whom I take refuge. He's finding shelter and refuge in him. Why have you rejected me, God? I'm finding shelter in you, but I feel like I'm being rejected. He's letting God see and hear everything about him. Why do I go about mourning? Because of the oppression of the enemy. I'm going through things for unjust reasons because of what they're doing. God, are you listening? Are you watching? What's the deal? And then he continues to turn in verse 3. Send out your light and your truth and let them lead me. In the midst of all the darkness, there will never be such a dark moment where God's light won't give you the next step. I talked about that last week. If you haven't gotten the message, listen to it on podcast. And we talk about this, that God will always give us enough light for just the next step. And so whatever dark situation you're in, you'd also have to try to convince me that it would be completely, utterly helpless if you did not have from God just the next step. And he says that. He knows. He's like, so I don't know where you're at. I don't know why you haven't delivered. I don't know why you're letting the enemy get away with what they're getting away with. But would you send out your light and your truth and let them lead me? Let them bring me to your holy hill and to your dwelling place. Then I will go to the altar of my God with exceeding joy. My exceeding joy. My God is my exceeding joy. Remember the bookend of desire? What do you desire? I mean, I'll tell you what, as your pastor, I'm going to be praying for you. God, would you put in us a desire like the psalmist who just had his greatest desire? He ached, he panted, he longed for you, he was thirsty for you. You were his exceeding joy. And I will praise you with the lyre, with a musical instrument. Oh God, my God, I'll praise you with a musical instrument. And then for the third time, and by the way, what are these three things? He's having to manage his emotions. After he's like, you're my exceeding joy. And in that pause, look, why does he say it again? Because do you ever feel that way? You're like, God, I love you. And then you're like, oh, but I feel so insecure and unworthy again. God, I love you. And then you feel in a funk and you go, oh, hey, soul, what are you doing downcast? You're believing lies. Why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God. I'm going to praise him. He's my joy. He's my salvation. He's my joy and he's my salvation. I think this line might say it best. One from Spurgeon and then another transparency line and then we're almost done. Spurgeon writes, he looked at all the trials that came his way and he saw them as waves. I mean, if you've ever been in the ocean, I grew up in Florida, and when hurricanes would come, it was especially fun to go to the beach because the waves were huge and dangerous. And when you're young or old, you might enjoy that. I enjoyed it. And I used to try to withstand the waves that would come. And I used to do it at Estee Lauder's house. I lived in West Palm Beach, and I would actually go to Estee Lauder, the perfume lady. I'd go to her house and go to her beach because she had this huge wall of concrete, and the waves would crash against it. And I used to try to sit on the edge like this of her of her bank there, and the waves would come. You could see them coming this way, and you'd hold on with all of your might. And I never won, by the way, ever. Every time I would get picked up and thrown against these huge things of concrete. Some of you are going, why did you do that? I was young. And so you do these things. You test it. I was literally trying to see if I was stronger than the waves. And the waves consistently crashed me and threw me against the rocks every time. That illustration is how Spurgeon saw the waves of life and trials of life. But here's what he learned. He said, I've learned to kiss the wave that throws me against the rock of ages. So this psalmist sees all these troubles. He even hears emotional strain. Like the wave hits him, and then there's like little waves of emotion. There's little waves of emotion that are coming and hitting him as well. But what Spurgeon realizes is this: if those waves are going to cause me to praise again and be hungry and thirsty, you know, listen, when I there was one time when those breakers, when the waves hit me and it actually put me underneath, I didn't even know this, but the sand had eroded underneath these waves, and I actually got sucked down underneath her house under this concrete edifice, and I was stuck down there just turning and turning and turning. And eventually I got pulled back out to the sea and came up. But I thought I was doing the prayer thing like, this is it, and I'm sorry for being stupid, Lord, for doing this. And I finally came up for air, and that was panting for me. I was panting. That's what Spurgeon's saying. When the waves come, all they're doing is thrusting you against something that will never move, which is Christ. So he said, I've learned to kiss these waves that come. I've learned to kiss them. And this is the statement that I would try to encourage you guys with. Someone living in transparency sees their current situation that they're in, and they see God's salvation at the same time. Because listen, it's okay that you have problems. Jesus promised you would. But in the midst of every situation you're in that seems wrong or bad or evil or injustice or unjust, you also have an opportunity to decidedly see and trust God's salvation, God's rescuing for you, God not giving up on you. When I taught through the book of Exodus, we saw it as in every moment they could either see salvation or they could see destruction. Why are you depressed, soul? Why are you downcast? Hope in God. Destruction, salvation. So when you see something really bad coming, you go, all I see is trouble. Start looking for salvation. God can do that. God did this to the sons of Korah who were rejected and did things so horribly selfish and foolish. Let me read you this quote by Martin Lloyd-Jones. It's going to be three screens long. Some of you are taking pictures for notes. Keep your camera ready three times. The essence of this matter is to understand that this self of ours, this other man within us, has got to be handled, the emotions. Do not listen to him. You have to turn on him. You have to speak to him, condemn him, upbraid him, encourage, exhort him, encourage him. Remind him of what you know. Why do we read the scriptures? Because you need to remind yourself. Instead of listening placidly to him and allowing him to drag you down and depress you, remind him, remind yourself. For that is what he will always do if you allow him to be in control, unless you're budgeting. The devil takes hold of self and use it in order to depress us. We must stand up as this man did, as the psalmist did, and say, why, soul, are you so downcast and depressed and disturbed? Why are you so disquieted? Why are you restless? Stop being this way. Hope in God. For I shall yet praise him for the help of his countenance. He who is the health of my countenance and my God. Ooh. God, our help, would you give us that help? We are not expecting a day today or any day after it to be a day without trouble. We're budgeting for it. God, I don't know that we can say we're ready to kiss the waves that feel like they crush us. I don't know if we're ready to say we kiss the waves that throw us somewhere. But if we knew that the throwing was going to throw us on you, I think we can learn to kiss them, to welcome them. God, would you help us in our disbelief? would you forgive us for deciding, for probably most all of us, most of our days, we've decided to let our emotions manage us? God, I've been in a funk and felt justified in being that way because of what people said or did, or what I did and felt guilty of. And thank you that your victory in your life goes deeper than death. It goes deeper than regret. It goes deeper than the accusations of the enemy, and you will have the final word. One day, every eye will see, every tongue will confess that you are Lord when you return. You have the first word, you have the last, God. And you reign. You alone are God, and you alone are holy. And we will remind ourselves of all that you've done. Soul, rejoice in God. Emotions, rejoice in God. Oh, mind, believe and think on the things of God and behold and embrace them. You alone are God, and we will praise you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. If the Lord used this message to speak to you, would you consider leaving us feedback on our iTunes or Facebook page? We would love to hear about what God is doing in your life. If you would like to know more about City Lights and how you can get involved, please visit our website at www.citylights.cc for more information. Have a great day.